Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Terry Cavanaugh.
And a good morning to you. It's 7:16. I'm Terry Cavanaugh for Galesburg Live. This morning on our program, our guests include Owen Mulder, the director of the Galesburg Colony Underground Railroad Freedom Station at Knox College. He's here with me this hour. We're going to talk in just a moment. And coming up next hour, Chris Enroth from the University of Illinois Extension. He's a horticulture educator, and even though it's the dead of winter, we're still going to talk about some things that may help you into spring planting. So Chris will be here in an hour, but Owen is here right now, and happy to have him back in our studios. Good morning.
Good to see you again, Terry. Yeah. And I can't help but comment in light of what you were saying about your programming this morning. Certainly been a mild winter.
Yes, it has, hasn't it? We haven't seen a lot of snow, knock on wood.
No, no. Yeah. My grandson would like to see a little.
Probably.
He got a sled for Christmas, but he hasn't used it yet.
Yeah, that's just the thing. It's the snowmobilers, the sledders, the skiers are probably thinking, hey.
Right. Well, I keep telling Teague that, you know, there's still February.
That's right.
And even March sometimes.
Even March sometimes, you bet. Well, I asked Owen to come in this morning because I'd been seeing several stories about Samuel G. Wright and a very historic journal that's housed at the archives of the Knox College Seymour Library. But before we get to that aspect, he's with the Freedom Station at Knox College, the Galesburg Colony Underground Railroad Freedom Station. And for those who may not be familiar with that, Owen, I really just kind of want to go back and revisit that about when it started and how you became involved with it after retiring from your position at Knox, and really what that means and how much it's really had quite a ripple effect that I don't even think you expected at the time it opened
up.
No,
I must say, Terry, that then-President Taylor at Knox College approached me when I was getting close to retiring from running the Knox College alumni operation and essentially said that he hoped that I might be able to use my background and education as a historian to not let Knox College's early history, early anti-slavery and abolitionist history particularly, be lost. And so I started spending time on that the last few years I was in the alumni office. But in 2004, after I retired in the spring, that summer I became the director of the college's Underground Railroad Center. And I must say it took a turn in my life that I really didn't anticipate. I gave a few speeches and then wrote a couple of scholarly articles. My first book on the Western Illinois Underground Railroad came out in 2007. My second book on Theodore Dwight Weld, who was a leading figure in the American anti-slavery movement nationally and had connections to Gale and Knox history. My second book came out, and I've given over 250 speeches around the state and throughout the country now, and have had kind of a wonderful new career late in my life.
Owen, are there freedom stations across the country? Are there different underground railroad centers or museums or just like what Knox has? Or I mean, are there bigger places?
Not necessarily the way Knox has, but there are a variety of different locations where there may be an underground railroad house that was used to harbor fugitive slaves. There's one like that, for instance, Owen Lovejoy's house up in Princeton, Illinois. There are also a number of colleges and universities who put a great deal of emphasis on anti-slavery history. And there is a individual in Maryland who publishes every 2 months. It's called the Underground Railroad Free Press that Peter Michael publishes and edits himself. And it has had a remarkable influence on bringing in information from not only the United States, but from Underground Railroad, railroad locations in Canada, that have given him an opportunity to spread the word about the different kinds of approaches, both in terms of local scholarship that an individual or two might be involved with, all the way up to college professors and scholars who have addressed the subject.
Mm-hmm. Your dad was also an historian, was he not? I mean, wrote books himself. Did he offer you any advice way back when? I mean,
oh, Terry, I chuckle because I had a really good teachers growing up at Galesburg High School, at Knox, and a graduate school at Miami University in Ohio. But I really think that the most fundamental influence in terms of my historical education came as a result of sitting at the kitchen table or the dinner table and listening to my dad. My dad's work was pretty broad. He was interested in European history and American history. But in many ways, my introduction to this subject came because of his interest in Knox's history and Midwest history. Okay. In fact, he taught a course called the Midwest Seminar to students at Knox throughout a couple of decades at Knox. So in many ways, yes. For instance, Theodore Dwight Weld, who I alluded to as the subject of my main subject of my second book, Weld was a person that my dad told me about when I was in high school. And Weld is not as well known as other leading figures like Frederick Douglass and William Lloyd Garrison. But that gave me the opportunity to be aware of the subject in a much broader way, of course, than most people. And the Underground Railroad is a subject that I think a lot of people are interested in because it has all the elements of an exciting story. I mean, here were these fugitive slaves willing to take the risk to escape, knowing if they were captured and returned to slavery, that they would face a nightmare. And as a result of that, I have always been fascinated by the fact that, as I said, people are interested in the Underground Railroad, know a little bit about it, but they don't know a great deal about it. But as I said, it has all the elements of escapes and hideouts. And as I've said many times to people, the good guys versus the bad guys.
Was the Underground Railroad mainly concentrated along and east of the Mississippi, or was it occurring even else, well, even points further west, Owen?
You know, that's a good question. In terms of the scholarship that's been done on both the anti-slavery movement and the Underground Railroad, for the most part, that's been concentrated along the East Coast and into what I would call the Mideast, western Pennsylvania, Ohio, even Michigan. The amount of information that's been uncovered in terms of the Underground Railroad and abolitionist movement and where we live in the upper Mississippi Valley, Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, that has really only started to take off in terms of material being discovered about the subject, in the last 20 years or so. Now, that's not to say that there wasn't some information known before about the UGRR in this area and along the Mississippi River. But essentially, for the most part, the subject has been concentrated east of the Mississippi River. But I'd want to say something about one more thing about that. In fact, the Underground Railroad, and most people don't know this, headed in every direction. If you were a fugitive slave and you wanted to escape and you lived anywhere in what were southern states, you might want to try to hide on a boat that took off through the Gulf of Mexico and headed into the Caribbean. You might escape through Arkansas and Texas into Mexico. We know that fugitive slaves, not in large numbers, but some made it as far away as California. Others got on boats that hugged the East Coast. Sometimes slave owners took their slaves to Europe before they tried to escape. But where we live, of course, the story is primarily one of fugitive slaves heading out of southern states and also off river crafts like steamboats and barges where slaves were used and heading up through western Illinois, central Illinois, and Iowa. And one other important thing to know in that regard is that fugitive slaves also came through this area out of the slave state of Missouri. And as the crow flies, we're only about 90 miles from Missouri, so that explains why there were runaway slaves heading through this area as early as the 1830s and perhaps earlier.
Which tends to make me think, wow, how the connections that these people who mostly the abolitionists who were secretive or helping the runaway slaves, how they made their connections with each other to continue that progression.
Yes, yes. And that's one of the interesting things about working with the puzzle of how you put this together. We know that fugitive slaves, for the most part, were people who decided to bolt from where they were living in order to seek freedom. But, of course, most of them had not been very far from where they were used as slaves. So this was very daring indeed. This was a heroic effort. Some of these slaves, though they couldn't read, knew a slave or two who could read or partially read. And sometimes that information about how they might get away or where there were even Underground Railroad locations would be part of a newspaper story that a slave would get his or her hands on and pass that information along. There's another wonderful irony to how they heard about what to do if they tried to run away, and that is that sometimes, particularly on Sundays or holidays, when slaves were working on a farm or a plantation, they would hear slave owners who had gathered after church or had gotten together for a party complaining about who these Underground Railroad operators were. So that a slave owner in Missouri might be complaining about those darn people in Galesburg, Illinois, in that abolitionist town, and helping slaves escape. So there's, as I said, there's a wonderful irony to the fact that sometimes the information was transmitted that way. Finally, though, Terry, this should be remembered. Some of these slaves had no idea, really, what they were going to do when they escaped, how they were going to get away, and had very little information other than they knew how to find the North Star at night. They knew if they moved against the current of any river or stream in this region, even if it weaved and zigzagged, they'd eventually be heading northward. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they usually traveled at night and would hope to come upon people who would help them.
Which was one of my biggest questions, Owen, was they're running away, they're getting to a different location, then what? I mean, what?
Well, Terry, that's what's interesting. You take a figure like Samuel G. Wright, who we'll talk about in a little while. Here was a man who we know from his own record in his diary that he helped fugitives escape for years. But the more you study the subject, you realize that the very definition of how do you decide who you call an Underground Railroad operator, why would you give them that name, gets tricky. Because we know that we come across records of individuals who maybe only once in their life or twice in their life were put in a circumstance when a black woman came along with two children, explained that she had escaped from slavery, and that person had to say to themselves, what am I going to do now? Am I going to help this person or not? Well, now, do you call that person an Underground Railroad operator? I suppose in a very distant sense, broad definition, they were. Certainly, though, not like people in Galesburg and Princeton and Toulon who regularly helped these fugitives get away.
Yeah. We're going to pause for a moment. We'll take a news break. Owen Mulder, who is the director of the Galesburg Colony Underground Railroad Freedom Station in Knox College, is my guest this morning. We have an interesting story to tell about Samuel G. Wright, who indeed was a Underground Railroad conductor and helper of the runaway slaves. And we'll talk about him in our next half hour here on Galesburg Live.